Blog Talk Radio.
That's right, everybody. You know who it is. Coach Mike Jones on the coach with the most. Coming at you hard from coast to coast. I don't want to boast, but now I got to roast you in my social media posts. You double dose, undiagnosed. You feeling tired, life inspired, now you're a ghost. I'll be your host, so won't you raise a toast to the coach with the most, Coach Mike Jones.
Welcome to another edition of the Coach Mike Jones Show podcast, episode 44. Here with my co-host, the one and only sign guy. He's so fly, he's going to take you high. He's going to make you feel like you're in the sky. I don't even have to lie because here's sign guy. How you doing, brother?
Doing all right, Coach, with the most. Coming out from coast to coast. You don't mean to brag, but you have to boast because your favorite all-time actress is Marky Post.
Definitely, man. All right, so hey, why don't you introduce our guest and give him the first-timer question?
Well, we have with us Moondog Manson. And Moondog, the first-timer question, since it's your first time here on the Coach Mike Jones podcast, how did you get into the business of professional wrestling?
How you doing, Mike Jones? How you doing, son guy?
Hey, we're
doing
very
well.
Thank you for your time,
yeah,
brother.
Yeah, I appreciate being on the show. So this is how I got into professional wrestling, right? So when I was a kid growing up, right, I was kind of socially isolated from my peers. So pretty much the only thing I did was kind of watch pro wrestling on the weekends and cartoons, right? So it was a big mainstay in my life, right? So I always wanted to be a professional wrestler. So, you know, I didn't quite know how to get into it, but when I was probably about 19 years old, I walked into my local video store and the guy who was working behind the counter says, "Hey," he says, "like, this guy came in here with this poster for this wrestling show and asked me to hang it up, but I thought, you know, it'd probably be more important if I give it to you directly instead of putting it up on the window." So he gave me the poster, and I ended up checking out an ECCW show. And, you know, I went down there, and it was, like, some pretty intense wrestling. You know, they were doing some extreme wrestling. And so I was like, I knew this is where I wanted to get in and try to figure it out. So I, contacted the ECCW and got into the training program there. It was a little challenging getting in though at first because they were having problems, right? Like I was trying to reach out to them for about 6 months before they got back to me.
Okay, nice. And then, so who were some of your heroes growing up, whether it was sports, music, wrestling, ordinary life, or all of the above?
So when I was growing up, I was really into hip hop music and the black culture. Because I kind of, when I was, you know, isolated from my peers, right, it was like pretty much all the indigenous kids and the black kids were my friends, right? So, I kind of grew up poor, and so I kind of identified with the black culture a lot. So it was like, you know, it was a lot of the stuff, you know, I loved Eddie Murphy, you know, Mr. T was my favorite growing up. I always wanted to be like Mr. T, which is kind of, if you see me, where I got a mohawk, that's why I got this homage to Mr. T.
Okay, nice.
Yeah.
What about in wrestling?
Well, with wrestling, right? You know, I was, you know, like a little kid, and everybody looked up to Hulk Hogan. You know, so I wanted to be like the next Hulk Hogan. But then when I saw Rocky III, right, and I saw Mr. T and Hulk Hogan, you know, it was like all that stuff when the crossover there happened, I was kind of like, yeah, I kind of want to be like a Mr. T in pro wrestling too, right? So, you know, that's the thing is my whole life has been fun enough to be a pro wrestler. That's what I always wanted to do, and that's what I became.
Okay, right on. Time?
Now, if you always wanted to be Mr. T in wrestling, obviously Mr. T at a few different points in his life got into professional wrestling. Were you a big fan of what Mr. T did in the world of professional wrestling?
Yeah, I loved it. How I first was exposed to Mr. T was obviously on the A-Team. You know, so like when I was growing up, you know, I remember being a young kid, right? And, you know, I had an 8 o'clock bedtime, but I think it was Thursday night when the A-Team was on, live on TV. It was the only night of the week my mom would let me stay up later just so I could watch the A-Team, right? So, like, my whole life, I was like, I want to be part of the A-Team. I always wanted to have the van. I wanted to be just like Mr. T, you know? So when I started seeing him getting the wrestling, all the crossover stuff that was going, I was like, I was absolutely loving it. You know, I was like a little fat kid in a candy store just eating it all up.
Very cool.
Now, were you a big fan in the later wrestling portion of Mr. T's life where he was with WCW and he would sometimes be in the corner of Hulk Hogan for big matches and even wrestled Kevin Sullivan at Starrcade?
So this is the funny thing about me was when I first started breaking into the wrestling business probably about 26 years ago, I kind of slowed down on watching wrestling. I was watching a little sporadic bits of it, but for some reason I kind of saw all my peers in it, right? They were watching Monday Night Raw and they were kind of all getting like brainwashed and we're all trying to copy what they were seeing on TV, right? I kind of want to be more authentic, so I actually scaled back watching wrestling, so I kind of missed a lot of that part. You know, but I was okay. Like I was having more fun wrestling than I was watching wrestling at that point.
Okay. Gotcha. And did you play sports in high school or growing up?
Yeah, so I also had a dream when I was growing up that I wanted to be a professional football player. So I did play football when I was a teenager. When I was in elementary school, I played soccer, right? I was a goaltender. I was pretty good at that, but I only played soccer for like one season. But when I was a teenager, you know, my local high school didn't have a football team, but like East Vancouver had a community ball team that I went and played for 3-4 years. So when I first started out, you know, playing football, right, I was this little fat kid, you know, wasn't really that athletic, didn't lift weights. So I was kind of like pretty bad at it, right? But I managed to, by the end of the season, I got the most improved player award. And then as the seasons progressed, right, I was actually, you know, even though I was a lineman, like my last year playing football, they had me as the unofficial team captain. So, because I went from being a little useless kid on the team to being like the monster. But it was an amazing time, right? Like, because it was the East Vancouver team, so it was like all the tough kids, you know, it was like the other poor kids and shit. So, like, I remember, like, I think my last year playing football, like there was, all my friends, right? Like they were the indigenous kid, man, his fists were all busted up from punching walls, and the three my black friends that were on the team too, right? They were all convicted of criminals at that point. They were only teenagers, right? Like my best friend at the time, he was like only 17. He already spent 3 years in juvie for like murder. So like
wow.
I was hanging out with the toughest of the toughest.
Awesome. Okay. And then what's your self-defense background?
You know what? So I didn't know it when I was growing up, but I'm well aware of it now. I'm on the autism spectrum, and I have learning disabilities, right? So I didn't do very well in high school, but I'm actually a really smart man. So, like, my whole life I was getting into fights in the schoolyards and the streets. And I wasn't going out of my way to cause the fights, but people were always trying to fight with me, right? So I just got really good at defending myself. You know, so all the kids that would cause problems with me, so I have a memory of them just standing in front of me bleeding noses.
Okay. Right on.
Yeah.
Fine.
Now, up in Canada, I think it's a little bit different than here in the United States, but here in the United States, we vary state by state as far as athletic commissions go. And the strenuous nature of the commissions varies a lot. Some states don't even have a commission. Some of them are very strict. Some of them don't care as long as you pay your annual license fee. Do you run into licensing issues for your own wrestling career very often?
So here in British Columbia, right, where I'm currently living, they sporadically have athletic commissions, but it's not province-wide. It's usually in a city. So, like, Victoria might have one at a time, or Vancouver might have one at a time. But usually what happens is they deregulate wrestling until somebody makes a complaint. And then all of a sudden they get, they get all itchy and they kind of, oh, we got to go in and regulate the wrestling industry again, right? And then they make it challenging for everybody, right? So the last time it happened to us was there was like a fight, like a match, like in Surrey, British Columbia, and somebody basically knocked out to the Vancouver Athletic Commission saying, hey, look, these guys are doing like UFC-type fights just because one wrestler was on top of another wrestler mounted, throwing punches, looking like a UFC fight for like 10 seconds in a match, right? So then all of a sudden there was regulation in Vancouver again, and everybody's got to sign contracts, and they got to get, pay their fee to get, licensed, and the athletic commission's coming by the show, and they're making changes on the spot, So it comes and goes, right? But anytime the athletic commission gets involved in BC, it's just like whatever city it is, it usually causes temporary challenges. That's the thing is it does, it goes through changes too in the States too. Like I remember sometimes in Washington and in Oregon, it was more strict than other times. But that's the thing. It's just the commissions are kind of useless to a degree, I'm sure there's some places the commissions would probably save the wrestlers' butts.
Okay, and then my next question is the most memorable matches you've seen and been involved with. First of all, I want to tell you that I've seen you live a couple times. One of the matches that was memorable to me was the first match I seen you in at the training facility there, you versus Weed. Man, that was like a whirlwind.
Oh, yeah.
My goodness. and then, of course, I seen you against G-Doggy Dog in Washington here. But other than that, what are some of the most memorable matches you've seen?
Like when you say seen, like me firsthand at a show or like just in general?
Either way, in general, on TV,
I'll probably talk about the ones I've visually seen with my own two eyes. I can tell you because I actually felt the vibe too, right? So probably the most memorable match I've seen in person, right, was in New Westminster, British Columbia for ECCW. I was still a fan, and I had come to the show with, I think, my best friend at the time and a few other people. And I remember sitting in the crowd, and they had a barbed wire match between Maniac Matt Bourne and Chief Billy Two Eagles. And I remember those guys, they were fighting, and it was pure bloodbath, right? And they were just beating the crap out of each other. But I remember the pivotal point where they're both on the floor, and I see Matt Bourne wind his arm back and throw a punch that must have gone through about half a foot through Billy Two Eagles' head.
Damn.
And I looked at my friend, and I said, tell me that's fake. But it was like the most legit, And it's just, that's the thing. It's like, you go, all these kids are saying, oh, it's all bullshit, it's all bullshit. I said, try to get in the ring and see what happens, right? And that was the thing. As I learned that, I saw that point, I go, that's what I want to do for sure, right? And that's, so like the whole time I'm trying to funnel get into it. And it's because I'm watching guys like Billy Teagles and Matt Bourne, do bloodbaths. And that was probably my most memorable match, seeing it firsthand. The ones I've been in, there's been a couple of doozies. One time do you remember Juggernaut?
Yes.
So Juggernaut, he's another BC guy, right? We used to do the hardcore matches all over the place, right? And, they were, pretty hard-hitting matches. Because, at the time I was a 300-pound dude and he was like a 400-pound dude. And we both did the hardcore style and flying off the top ropes and, weapons, barbed wire, everything you could think of. So when ECCW was going to decide to do a hardcore tournament to, funnel off into an actual hardcore title, they pretty much, what they did is they did two tournaments on the island, and the winner of the first night and the winner of the second night were going to face each other in New Westminster for the titles, be the first ever hardcore champion. So the first night was an awesome show, right? So it was all hardcore matches, you know, start, you know, eight guys at the beginning of the show, you know, funnels down to two guys. Same thing on the second night. Well, me and Juggernaut made it to the finals on the second night in Port Hardy, B.C. And it was like something straight out of Japan, right? You know, the house wasn't that huge. It was like probably like, I don't know, I want to say 140 people, but it was, you know, probably closer to 80, right? Because it's a small town, right? But Juggernaut and I went out there, busted our asses off for 45 minutes. And it was like, it was such an insane match that, you know, the crowd was into it the whole time. You know, it's like one big power thing after another, blood everywhere. And, you know, it's like we literally kicked the crap at each other for 45 minutes, right? And the fans were so impressed that, like, even at the bar after the show, the fans are like, you know, I had this one indigenous man walk up to me, and he told me, he says, brother, I wasn't at the show, but I heard it was so good that I got a gift for you, right? And he hands me this the Zippo lighter, brand new Zippo lighter, never been used, with totem poles on. He gave me a gift, right? So, but that match, it was like insane. Like, we're doing, like, you know, flying off the top rope at each other, you know, putting each other through tables, and it was just like we went 45 minutes, but we literally could have gone an hour and a half, and the fans would have kept eating it up the whole time.
Damn.
And then I don't even know. Like, I think it was recorded on tape somewhere, but nobody knows where the tape is.
Man, that sounds brutal. Two nights in a row in that tournament.
Oh,
my
yeah.
goodness, against that type of competition. We were built differently back then.
Yeah, we were
built differently
back then, right? Like, we, you know, you had to be like a tough guy to actually get in the ring. You know, like even the small guys like Tony Cazzina, he was a tough guy in the ring.
For sure, you know.
But then probably my most, actually I had two. One time was, you know, here's the funny one. I'm going to tell you the one was Billy Two Eagles. This showed me what a gentleman Billy Two Eagles is. I had been suffering from post-concussion syndrome. Pretty much what happened was probably about 6 months earlier, I had had a match, and there was this greenhorn guy, Awesome Adam, who was like backyard trained, shouldn't have been in the business, right? And we were doing a tag match, and he was known for, because he was trying to emulate it. He was like Sabu, but he's a 300-pound kid that was self-trained, right? So it's like dangerous, right? So I remember, like, I'm in the match with him, and I'm down on my stomach, and I told the kid, like, I don't want to do anything crazy. Like, you're gonna show me you can wrestle tonight, right? Before we start doing crazy hardcore stuff. So when I'm trying to get up, like I'm up on all fours, and I hear my tag team partner, Moondog Chops, he just screams. He doesn't even say my stage name. He goes, Murray, stay down. And I'm just like, what? And all of a sudden, boom. Like Awesome Adam Bug lands ass first on my head. He does a leg drop on me from the top rope, doesn't call it out. I had no idea he was there, right? So actually, he knocks me silly, right? So I get up and I start, I literally started kicking the crap out of him. I was like smoking him in the hip with a chair, right? Just teach him a lesson for what he did to me. But it gave me a really bad concussion, right? And at the time, Jim Neidhart was there because he was a WWE talent scout at the time. And it was like the next day, it was like, you know, we were supposed to be in the training school, you know, working out in front of him. And like, you know, he goes, to, you know, brother, I saw, like, I know you can work, but I don't want you getting in the ring today because you're pretty fucked up. You got a goose egg on the back of your head still, right? So I had a pretty bad concussion from that. And, you know, about 6 months later, like, I had post-concussion syndrome. And when I was in the hospital getting treated for it, they ended up telling me that I also had a little bit of tonsillitis. So I was having problems breathing. So what happened was I was having a match with Chief Billy Two Eagles in a cage match in New West. And, like, I don't know what happened, but, like, I literally started the match, and I threw three punches, and, my throat closed off, and I could barely breathe. And Chief Billy Two Eagles, like, he pulled me through a cage match for 20 minutes, unable to breathe.
Dang.
He took care of me the whole time, right? Right? Like, he took care of me 20 minutes in the cage, right? So it was like that match, like, you know, he was easy on me. The fans had no idea I was under a medical emergency in the ring. We got the 20-minute match off. It was, you know, phenomenal. You know, so, like, that's the thing is I always love Billy Two Eagles. He took care of me in the ring that night. Like, he's always been a really solid brother to me. And then the other match I had was Matt Bourne. That was a real eye-opener. You know, I was probably been wrestling for about 5 years at that point, maybe a little longer. Maybe it was about 10 years I'd been working. I had a match with him also in New West, but it was at a different building. He at that point in my career, I wasn't really learning much from people, right? You know, it was kind of like I was teaching myself in the ring, you know, fine-tuning my skills. But I just remember, like, I had a match with him, and, you know, he was crazy as can be. And I just remember him in the ring waiting for him to come out, and, you know, as soon as he comes out, he's swinging this chain over his head, and he's screaming, "Come on, you motherfuckers, somebody fight me," right? And I'm scanning the crowd, and, like, there's drunk people in the crowd galore, you know, and some of these guys look like longshoremen and that, and there wasn't a person in the crowd that wanted to even look in Matt's direction. They were so afraid of him. Like, they thought he was going to come out in the crowd and just kill him, right? So I'm, like, looking at this going, "Oh, wow, man, this guy just scared the whole building," right?
Yeah.
So we go on, and so we're doing our match. We're beating the crap out of each other, brawling all over the place, right? And it's just at one point, he goes and picks me up for a pile driver on the floor. And what I remember, right, is, like, remember my head hitting the floor and my neck going crimp. And, you know, it's like, okay, you know, this is the point where usually a wrestler's neck breaks, right?
Yeah.
And I remember laying there on the floor, and I'm going, man, I just got pile driven on the floor, and, like, for real. And I just, that didn't even faze me. So I'm laying there, right, and I see my referee. I'm looking at Vern Siebert looking at me because he's all concerned in my face, you know, looking at all the boys in the back are, you know, shitting themselves, thinking I broke my neck. I'm like, "Vern, are you okay, brother? Are you okay?" And I'm just selling, right? But we got up, man. That was Matt. Like, that match, you know, that was the thing. I was like, when I wrestled Matt Bourne that time, right, he taught me something about, you know, working the crowd. You know, and that's the one thing I learned a long time ago is, like, you know, you don't even need to know how to really do moves, man. Just work the crowd. Right? That's the magic, right? Is working the crowd. It's not the moves you do. It's the crowd working.
Yes, for sure. That's definitely sweet.
Yeah.
Moondog, one of the things in professional wrestling that has been a constant in the last 50 years or so has been there's always been moondogs at present in the wrestling industry. We've had Moondog Spot and Spike, Moondog Rex. In Memphis, you had roughly 27 moondogs at any given time. Moondog Maine was very, very popular up in our area. There's lots of moondogs. Can you give us the definitive moondog family tree?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, right, it started with Lonnie Maine and it ends with me. And I'm going to explain this, right? So when I first started breaking in, Gorgeous Michelle Starrs, who I trained with. So he decided at one point, because when I was in the backyard at Terry Joe Silverspoon's place, this is where we were doing all the training. It was in Surrey, BC. And I was squaring off with one of the other kids that was training with, who would end up being Moondog Chops. So we're looking at each other, and I don't know what happened, but I started barking at him. He started barking at me, and then Star starts doing his typical, like, laughing like he's seeing dollar signs, right? And he's going, I got it. You guys are the new Moondogs. So, you know, I was like, that was cool, right? But then what happened was down the road at ICW where Tim Flowers was running shows, right? Well, Moondog, you know, Ed Moretti was wrestling there, right? Which, you know, now everything I know about the industry was, you know, it was kind of disrespectful us take you know, using his name. So, you know, Moondog Moretti had a little bit of heat with us. You know, I don't know how much the heat was. He's a really nice guy, right? So I think he was probably more upset than hot, right? So probably about 2 years down the road, I happened to be down in San Jose working for APW. And it was a little bit awkward because you got two Moondogs on the show. You got Moondog Moretti, Moondog Vanson, right? So Moondog Moretti was working somebody, and I don't remember who it was, and I was tagging with Gorgeous Michelle Starr against the Ballard Brothers with cheerleader Melissa in their corner. And, you know, basically what happened was before the show, right, like I see Ed Moretti, and he's like, so he asked me to go for a walk with him. So we just start talking and, you know, shooting the shit, and he kind of gets to know me a little bit. And it wasn't that long into it. He says, you know, I really like you, kid. You know, you got what it takes to be a moondog, right? So he you know, right away he was like, accepting me as his brother, right? So, and then he started telling me about Lonnie Maine and how, you know, when Lonnie Maine passed away, you know, he took on the moondog moniker as an homage to his good friend Lonnie, right? So it's like, that's the thing is, you know, it's like, to me, that's what the Moondog family tree is, right? Now, I've got no disrespect to the other Moondogs that were in the WWF, you know, like, they were solid Moondogs too, right, you know? One of them, though, Sailor White, I forget, what was he, Moondog, was it Rex? I can't remember, whichever Moondog he was. But Sailor White, yeah, out of Newfoundland, right? He was a little pissed at me one time too, right? He actually, before he passed away, he sent me kind of a nasty email. And I just fired back and I go, like, you know, listen, man, no disrespect, but, you know, I got respect from, you know, Moondog Moretti, and, you know, this is where the name comes from. Like, so, you know, please don't take it as an insult, but don't disrespect me either, right? And I never heard back from him, right? But, like, that to me, what the family tree is, right? So it starts with Moondog Melanie Maine and fucking ends with me. And, you know, and it's like, and it, the tree is so solid that it was probably about 5 years ago, All-Star Wrestling was doing their yearly awards, like honoring veterans in the business, right? And when they had Moondog Moretti up doing a speech, I was so blessed that he actually took the last part of his speech to actually officially pass the torch to me. You know, like, it was his time to shine, but he actually took the last few moments of his shine, and he totally praised me, and he put me over like $1 million. You know, and I've heard he's done, you know, interviews down in Portland and such, and he's, you know, praised me down there too. So that's the thing, is that, man, I love that man. Like, you know, Moretti taught me a lot. I didn't get to interact with him as much as I'd like to have, but it was great, because when I did that show down at APW, like a week later, we happened to be up in Oregon, I think working for Portland Wrestling, doing four shots. And they actually had us working each other. And, you know, it was great because I'm trying to remember his name. I don't know. I'm drawing a blank. He was booking down there at the time. It might come to me. But anyways, I just remember, like, when we did the matches, right? So they had Moondog versus Moondog matches, right? It was a little bit of a comedy spot, but it was like, you know, it was you know, it was because, you know, it was like, I'm the real Moondog. Rah, rah, rah. No, I'm the real Moondog. Rah, 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 right? That kind of stuff, right? And we were having such fun that by the time the fourth night came around, the house totally sucked. There was like 11 people there. You know, and the guys are all like mad, and they're just like, oh, this sucks. You know, we don't want to go out there wrestle. See, you know, they're doing the typical thing. They're getting lazy, and they're like putting 5-minute matches in, cheating the crowd. And it was like, you know, it was like time for me and Moretti, and we went out there, and, you know, it's like we had something planned out, but we ended up changing our mind, you know, partway through, and then we just called it all in the ring for 45 minutes. 11 people,
wow.
45 minutes.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah,
that reminds me. That was the thing.
Yeah,
yeah,
I've got the pleasure of wrestling Moondog Moretti, one of the toughest characters out there. I couldn't believe it. It was like in my sixth match, I got to win in an 18-minute countout. And, man, he's definitely quite the character and an awesome guy and great guy to work with. Now, who are some of your favorite people
amazing.
To work? Who are some of your favorite
Who's
people
Who's my favorite
work?
People to work? You know what? It's kind of funny because I've worked a lot of guys, you know, and there's some guys I won't ever be able to work again, right? Like, I got to work Honky Tonk Man one time, and it was an amazing adventure. Because what happened was I personally thought it was a bit of a rib, because what happened was it was a 3-day tour, and they had me working Honky Tonk Man. At this point, I was doing nothing but hardcore, right? So they had me working Honky Tonk Man on the third night, and I'm just kind of like, oh, this got to be a rib. Like, why they got Honky Tonk Man with the hardcore guy, right? So, like, I don't know. Maybe Honky Tonk Man thought it was a rib too, right? Actually, I think he did because he was watching my matches. I think he was trying to eye me up, trying to figure out what was on the go with me, right? So the first night I'm working a guy, Chance Beckett, and, you know, we're doing a match. And, you know, the finish of the match was like 3 power bombs, but he was bleeding so heavy that it was squirting out of his head. And it was like I picked him up for the first power bomb, and the blood's trying to hit the people in the front row.
Wow.
So I just had to finish the match there before he bled out, right? So, like, Chance Beckett needed like 12 stitches in the head or something like that to close the wound. And then the next day I was there was a noon radio spot being held at a pub, and they had me and Honky Tonk Man go down because I was a semi-main, he was the main event, just to kind of pump up the, you know, fans, try to get them to come down to the show. And, like, during the course of my interview, right, like, I literally go and I just basically go and say, like, I'm going to, because I was wrestling the Ladies' Choice at night. I basically told the crowd that, you know, come on down. They're going to see me wrap the chain around, because it was a chain match, right? I was going to wrap the chain around his neck, and I was going to throw him over the top rope and hang him to death. And then, you know, when the next night comes around, that ends up kind of being like the finish, and I get disqualified, right? So, you know, the next night when it's time to wrestle Honky Tonk Man, he's like, he walks up to me and he goes, like, you know, kid, I saw what you said on the radio, and then I saw your match last night, and I saw your match the night before, and, you know, it's like, I loved how you gave away your finish on the radio. and he says, that was like genius, right? He gave away the finish on the radio, and the fans still ate it up. So he says, you know, I see you got the chain. You know, I don't want to do a dog collar chain match. I said, but we can wrap it around your wrists, you know, and do a chain match that way. And I see you got a hardcore bat, so we'll do like a hardcore chain match. You know, at this time, you know, like Honky Tonk Man's coming in doing his, you know, 5-minute matches where it's like, you know, 70% of it's like introduction, right? So, you know, I'm in a hardcore chain match with Honky Tonk Man, and this guy, it was just like, it was absolutely amazing because he goes and pretty much he's everything. He's hitting me with a bat. We're doing all this extreme stuff. And it's a 20-minute match, right? Even at one point, he goes and whips me off in a turnbuckle, right? And I move and I turn around and like Honky Tonk Man's upside down in the turnbuckle. Right? He was just pumped right up. He's doing 20 minutes of hardcore with me, right? And it's like, you know, I lost the match, but I was just like, man, like I would love to work Honky Tonk Man, you know, because he was all pumped up to do it, right? So, like, a Honky Tonk Man of all the old guys that I wrestle, I would love to have an opportunity to work him. You know, it probably won't happen ever again, right? But then of the new guys, the guys I love working the most is probably Scotty Mack and El Phantasmo. You know, there's a lot of guys, and I don't want to disrespect. Oh, I should say Cremator too. I love Cremator like a brother, right? Like that guy, him and I beat the crap out of each other all over the place. But when it comes to different styles, like me and Cremator are pretty dialed in. Like we're doing it, it's like extreme beating the crap out of each other, right? So like, I'll work that guy every time. But if it's a match that takes me outside of my comfort zone, it's like El Phantasmo or Scotty Mack. Those are the guys that I love working.
What a blessing! Nice.
Of all
the
matches that you've had in your career and all the training you've done, being a hardcore wrestler for a large part of it, do you have a particular move or a hold that you have in your arsenal that surprises people when you pull it out and use it in a match?
I don't know if I would say surprises people, but... you know what? I don't want to say I have the best pile driver in the game. And I don't know how my pile drivers are now that I lost a lot of weight because I used to be a pretty big dude. But my pile drivers and my power bombs, right? It's like an amusement ride. And, you know, the thing is the fans, and like I used to get hot because, you know, like I'd finish guys with pile drivers and power bombs and that. And, you know, guys get hot because, like, oh, the other guy stole my move in my match, right? Well, I got to a point where it's like I was doing them so well that I was like, you guys do them all match long. As soon as I go in the ring and do mine, they're going to pop for mine and they'll forget yours, right? So that was the thing. Is like anytime I did those big moves, like I didn't do a whole lot of moves, you know, because I learned long early in the process, you know, you don't need a ton of moves. It's just about, you know, going out there and being a strong, you know, tough SOB and beating the crap out of dudes, right? That's what people wanted to see me do. But anytime I did a pile driver or a power bomb, it's like the crowd, it was like an amusement ride and the whole building popped.
I see.
Okay, and then, man, you've wrestled some of the toughest guys of all time, definitely some of the toughest guys in the Northwest. Who would you say are some of your toughest opponents?
You know what? Jace, so I got the honor to work in Jason the Terrible and Leatherface. You know, they were big stars in Japan. Jason the Terrible, Ralphie Rodriguez, he's a pretty tough dude. Leatherface, that guy's nuts. He's I don't know what he's like now, but at the time he was like 330 pounds, and I don't know how tall he was, like 6'4", but maybe 6'6", I don't. Anyways, he would hit you, right? And he would hit you so hard. And then you'd hear him giggling under that leather face mask, and you just knew something was wrong with the dude. right? So it's like you're wrestling the guy, and you're kind of like, you know, you're kind of like, you know, and that's the thing is the fans don't realize you're kind of like, oh, this guy's kind of not right. So, you know, the worker's kind of afraid of him a little bit too, right? So, like, the dynamics of the match are just amazing. But probably the toughest guy I've ever worked, like, Billy Two Eagles is pretty tough, but probably Matt Bourne. You know, Matt Bourne is probably the toughest guy I ever worked, but which is, you know, he was the kind of guy that if you were in a dressing room, he was cool with everybody. But the moment you got a teeny bit of attitude and he smelt that attitude on you, he was focused on you and he made sure you shut up or you were going to be in trouble, right? And we usually been the former's like, huh, so you think you're a tough guy, eh? I'll tell you, you got something to say about Matt Bourne?
No, I was going to say about Billy Two Eagles. Man, before I got into wrestling, I seen him in Buddy Wayne wrestle in Lincoln High School out on the gym there. They had no mats on the floor. They're flying all over the place, elbow drops off the top. I was just totally in awe. And then a year and a half later, I got to debut against Billy Two Eagles. My goodness, those chops are something else, and he's definitely one of the toughest wrestlers. And it was nice. After the match, he says to me, don't ever let anybody say you can't wrestle, brother, because he says I can. Then he had one more thing he asked me. Yeah. He had one more thing he asked me. Excuse me. Let me finish real quick. He says, you got any Polka Loca? I said, nope.
Yeah, I love Billy. I'd work. Yeah, that's the thing. He's just amazing, right? The first time he chopped me, right, I wasn't in a match with him, but it was my debut show, and it was like a weapons battle royal, right? So this was a little bit of a shock because I had been training in the backyard to do wrestling moves, right? And the first thing that happens to me in a weapons battle royal is I had one of the veterans smoke me in the head with a toaster. Oh. And I just remember thinking in my head, like, what the fuck did I just get myself into? Right? This is not what I just trained for. I just got smoked in the head with a toaster. But then at the end of the night, right?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think that was my reaction on the first chop I got from Billy. What have I got myself into?
Totally, right? And then you're hooked after that. You're hooked on it. But I remember in the dressing room, right, at that time Billy would haze the new guys in, right? Because the guys would all go like, oh, you guys got to get three chops from Billy Two Eagles. And I just remember him chopping me. And I don't know if it was the second chop or the third chop. Like, I swear my heart skipped a beat. But I thought I was in trouble the moment I saw him. The first chop he threw was on the concrete wall, and I swear to God, I heard the concrete wall. Like, it was like such a stiff shot. And then when he hit me, like, my heart skipped a beat, and it was just like, oh, it was brutal, right? But the thing is, it was like, you know, if Billy did that to you and you took it like a man, he loved you moving forward. Like, as long as you took anything he had, he fucking took care of you. And then Matt Bourne, right? You know, since Matt's passed on, right, I wouldn't tell this story publicly when he was alive, right, but because it was kind of like a personal thing between him and I, but like passed on, I kind of want to show people Matt's sensitive side, right? So, you know, Matt had a lot of problems, like, you know, so did I, right? So, you know, kind of the way we grew up, you know, we both kind of had similar issues with our dads, you know, like I think our fathers didn't show us enough love, right? You know, kind of, you know, probably the way they grew up type stuff, right? So what happened was I remember being with Matt Bourne up in – I think it was Quesnel, BC, and like I remember Gorgeous Michelle Starr, he's like laughing, he says, oh, Manson, you like to party, brother, I'm going to stick you in a hotel room with Matt Bourne. And it's like, I was a greenhorn still at this time, right? I'd probably only been wrestling for about a year and a half, maybe, and but at this point, I'd already been like starting to hang out in the nightclubs, and I was like, you know, with my history of, you know, growing up poor, you know, and hanging out with, you know, immigrants and like all the tough black kids and indigenous kids, right? I ended up, like, hanging out in the clubs, and I started interacting with all these gangsters and that, right? So, like, I was kind of getting dangerous myself, right? I was a bouncer, having a lot of fun doing it. But they got me stuck in, you know, with Matt, and I'm kind of like, you know, at this time, because I knew what Matt was all about. I've seen him do more than enough crazy stuff, right? And I was kind of worried, right? But it was funny because we're both back at the hotel, and we're both kind of hammered. And, you know, it's like we got Subway sandwiches delivered to us, and it's like we started talking, and, you know, the thing is we actually started talking about our dads. We kind of opened up to each other, you know, like, you know, typically men wouldn't do, right? But like I think he saw this like even though I was like a tough kid, right? I think he saw a soft kid inside me, right? So he was like he was old enough to be like my dad too at the time, right? So like he was showing me respect. So we started talking about our fathers, and we kind of opened up, and we both came to the conclusion that we loved our dads, and we knew our dads loved us, right? And it was kind of intense because we both actually kind of cried a little bit in front of each other. So it was like we had a really tight bond moving forward after that night. And, you know, that's the thing. Is like I love Matt like a brother, you know. So, like, anytime I got to work him, like that time in New West when he was whipping that chain around, like it was like a, such an honor, right, to experience the ring with him. But that was the thing, is like Matt, you know, he was crazy and he probably done a lot of bad things in his life, but at the core of him, it was a really good man that, you know, and it's just sad because like there's so many of us, you know, like have problems battling addiction issues and that, right? And I wish Matt was still alive, you know, because he was a solid guy. And like there was an awesome person inside of him. I wish more people got to experience.
For sure. You know, and man, I did love Matt Bourne his whole career, the Northwest, Texas, Georgia, all over the place. And then it was nice. I got to be on the Sandy Barr tribute show and Matt Bourne was on there. So it was nice to get to work a show with him and be in the locker room with him. Fine.
Oh yeah. I love Sandy Barr, man. That's a name I haven't heard in a while. I was lucky. I got to work some shots for Sandy Barr, man. It was an amazing experience at the world famous flea market. I got
awesome.
Body slams for 10 tables one night after a show.
Oh, goodness. Jeez.
Yeah, this is a good story. So here's the thing. Is something happened. The show the second night actually didn't happen. So the first night, the show went up, you know, it was awesome. The next night, we all drove to the venue. It was a high school somewhere. And, like, I forget where it was, but when we got to the building was unlocked. So we got in, but we couldn't get into the gymnasium. So we're there, and the wrestlers are all in the lobby, and like we're trying to get a hold of the building, and nobody's coming in, and then the fans are showing up, and next thing you know, it's like wrestlers and fans are hanging out in the lobby waiting for the gym to open, and then finally somebody from the school comes by, and they're like, "How did you guys get in here?" And then for some reason, the school had no idea that the show was supposed to be on. So the
wow.
show didn't actually happen. So we end up going back to, Sandy Barr's flea market. And he had already had it all set up for the boys, right? He got kegs of beer and... You know, so, you know, we had a designated driver. Like, Moondog Chops was going to stay sober, and he was going to drive us back, you know, first thing in the morning. So, you know, the rest of us are drinking and having a blast, right? And, you know, I'm green, you know, down there, and, like, you know, guys are, you know, Sandy Barr's picking me up, Jesse Barr's picking me up. Like, they're just, like, you know, slamming me through tables, and, like, I got it through about 10 tables, right? And it was, like, the most amazing thing I saw at that point was, the last time Sandy Barr picks me up for a body slam, his knee gives out on him. He crumples down the floor and he's not moving.
Oh.
And like everybody's like, "Oh my God." You know, it's like Sandy, like brother, you okay? You okay? Right. And he's not, and he's just not moving. Right. And like, we're all kind of concerned about him. Right. And then like, Jesse, you know, like I think his family instinct kicked in. It's like his dad's on the ground. Right. So he literally, like, he actually gets down on the floor to hold his old man, right? Because he's like, you know, he's like worried about his dad, right? And then you see this little grin pop on Sandy's face. And then he starts shooting on Jesse.
Oh,
and he's trying to stress Jesse, right? And he's actually getting him in on Jesse pretty good, right? And it was like so amazing, right? And then the whole vibe changed. There's no more going through the tables. Oh, but the funny thing about the tables, right, is it would actually force me to go out and get the table that I had to go through. So I'd have to go out in the main hall, bring a table back into the where we were drinking, and then I'd get put through it, right? So it was a blast. But I remember Sandy Barr telling me, and I wish I had listened to his advice on this earlier in the process. He actually, you know, he was a little bit drunk in front of me, right? But he's like, he goes, "I really like you, kid," but he starts tapping my stomach. He says, "But you got to lose this thing." And, you know, it's like the thing is I never lost that thing until later in life. And that would have probably been the thing that if I lost that thing when I was early on in my career, I probably would have done something more than just kind of be like a Pacific Northwest legend. Right. Because, you know, what I found out over the course of years is being obese doesn't actually benefit you in any capacity. It causes like low grade inflammation all throughout your body, including your brain. So your brain just doesn't fire as good as it should be. Right. So the thing is, what I was doing in the ring was pretty amazing for my weight. But, like, now I know if I'd slimmed down, you know, it was like 225, maybe 245, you know, muscly, you know, I probably would have done a lot more with my career, right? But that was the thing. Is like, you know, that whole night with Sandy Barr was just amazing. You know, like, you know, I got to experience like real, like breaking into the business kid stuff, right? Not like today,
yeah.
Right? It's like it's too docile today, right? But back in those days, like if you were the honor to be involved in those kinds of hazing rituals, it was just amazing. It's like a story in a lifetime telling, and it legit like makes you a stronger individual. Doesn't break you, doesn't hurt you, but actually makes you a stronger individual. And that's what the fans need to see, strong wrestlers, you know, in the ring.
Yes, for sure. And I got a Jesse Barr story. Of course, I was a huge fan of his all the way through Jimmy Jack Funk, all that. But it was at the Tacoma Pavilion, Bicentennial Pavilion in the 70s when I was just a teenager and my brother was younger than me. And after a match, my brother and the neighbor kid jumped in the ring and started running the ropes, and nobody got him out of there. And then all of a sudden, some fans that were part of, you know, they're related to the wrestlers or something, I heard them say, "Let's
yeah.
get Jesse." And they said, "Let's get Jesse." Right about then,
yeah.
my neighbor kid and my brother decided, oh, it's time to get out.
yeah, that's it, right? That happens sometimes, and sometimes the strong guy's got to get in the ring and clear house, right?
That family's
amazing, yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, obviously, you worked a lot here in the Pacific Northwest, but did you venture out any to the other areas of the North American continent? Did you go over to the East Coast of Canada or the United States or into the southern part of the United States, anything like that?
Yeah, so, you know, because the thing is, like, I'm on the autism spectrum, right? So what happens is I kind of sometimes my social skills and that aren't quite there. So, like, I wasn't as motivated to kind of venture out as far as I should have, right? But I was lucky enough to get some bookings and that, and I've worked in Canada. I've worked in British Columbia primarily, but I've worked in Alberta, worked in Saskatchewan, I worked in Manitoba. I had a 3-month tour lined up to work in the Maritime Strait for Grand Prix Wrestling. My tour fell apart though because I couldn't make it for the first part because I had to be the best man at a Muslim wedding. But in the meanwhile, they asked me if there was any other guys from BC, and I kind of made the mistake at the time to ask Michelle Starr, like, you got any kids you want to, like, maybe send out that way because they're asking for it? And I sent out two guys, Sweet Daddy Devastation and I think he's, like, blind now, Aaron Idol, right? And the problem with those guys is they both had a bit of attitude problems, right? And, you know, they didn't like me, but I didn't like them either because they had attitude problems. You know, they didn't really want to be a part of the boys. They just want to be their own little group, you know, and that started to become more more of a thing that happened in dress rooms, you know, because click groups, you know, like of them would normally get kind of broken up, right? But at this point, right, like promotions are starting to cater to these guys, you know. And so when these guys go to the Maritimes, they literally didn't want to work anybody else except for themselves, like against each other. And then Sweet Daddy Devastation, I don't know if he was showering or not, but he had like the worst BO, right? And like it was like the boys were starting to like, you know, it was like this word was spreading around how bad his body odor was. And they would literally not hang out with the boys. They were like staying in the hotel room, I think playing video games or something together. You know, so what happened was they started nicknaming out in the East Coast, you know, like if you didn't shower, they called it being a BC boy. So by the time it was said and done for me to go out there, I had so much heat with the Grand Prix Wrestling that I lost my bookings. Right? And I'm
man.
Just like, oh, God, like, it's not even my fault. But then in the States, like I worked Washington, I worked Oregon, I've been in California. I almost worked a shot down in Tijuana, but when I worked at the Cow Palace in San Jose there that time for APW, we had to get across the border for the nighttime show, and we just got to the building too late to get put on. But, you know, then I was supposed to go over to Korea to wrestle a few times. Because Jason the Terrible was the booker for, I forget what it was called, it was the promotion in Korea. And the first time I went to go in, it was in February, and the building that they were going to do the show that was the one where the Summer Olympics was held at. And they couldn't do it because there was like 2 feet of snow on the ground. So, you know, that was understandable. But then my next tour that I was going to do over there, Jason the Terrible had to reach out to me and say, listen, brother, man, I'm really sorry, but I'm going to put you wanted to put Michelle Starr on the show instead of me, only because what was going to happen was Michelle Starr was going to bring him over here, right? So it was kind of like he was doing a favor for Starr to get himself over here, right? So I kind of understood that, right? But when Jason the Terrible got here and he hooked up with me, he actually gave me a Ribera Steakhouse jacket of his as a gift, as an apology, because he really wanted me to go over there, right? But so I didn't get to go over there, and then, you know, things in my life started shifting, and I started hanging out in the nightclubs more, and but I didn't really do too much traveling. Well, plus I started getting border problems too, right? Like one time when my career was at its hottest, like I remember having 20 bookings in this, or I had 18 bookings in the U.S., and I had like 20 bookings up in Canada that I had to turn down, right? But then I ran into border problems, and pretty much the last time I tried to cross the border in the States, the customs agent said, listen, you can keep trying to come in here, but at some point we're going to arrest you. And I'm like, okay, sayonara, United States. It was good enough for me. So I just started taking all the bookings back up here, right? So then things kind of slowed down. I started shifting off, and then, honestly, the business started to go downhill just across the board, right? You know how it comes in waves, right? So, you know, instead of being, weekly, tours everywhere, we go down, and it's you're lucky to have a couple matches a month. So I just started realizing, because I was bouncing in clubs and that, and I started realizing, you know what, I don't even need the ring to be Moondog, because I can just be Moondog in the clubs. So, that's what I started doing for a big chunk. I was coming to work in shows, but none of the guys were understanding what I was doing in the background. I'm hanging out with all this organized crime stuff, bikers, mobsters. I'm getting in with them all, deep, right? So, I had most of the guys in the dressing room had no idea, but, I'm sitting in there, and, I'm a full-blown gangster, in the thing, and I'm just acting like crazy old Moondog. They got no idea, right? But the shit I was getting into, and, I was just living life. It was go, go, go party time for a whole decade in the clubs, right? So that's pretty much why I didn't do much, right? But then when that slowed down, I started getting back into wrestling. But I was, I was overweight and getting fatter because I was kind of disabled at that point, right? And, my mental health started sliding because I was just drinking too heavy, right? Typical, gift for guys. Been doing this shit for too long, right? So, but, now I got all my stuff all cleaned up. Now I'm starting to get ready because I'm actually, I've been doing it for, 26 years now, and I totally feel great now, so I know I can do it for another 26 for sure. So now I'm at the point where I'm trying to actually venture places, and I kind of want to get into Japan. I want to show these guys the stuff I can do, because I know I can still work.
Great googly moogly, that's a lot.
Yeah.
Okay, my next segment is called Favorites, so I have a few questions. We'd like to know what your favorite things are. I'm sure Sign Guy and the fans would like to know what your favorite coffee is. Coffee to drink.
My hobby? Or coffee?
Coffee.
Oh, coffee? Yeah, I don't know about that, man.
You don't drink much coffee?
Not really.
Okay. I used to drink a lot.
Back in the day, honestly, my favorite drink was anything with Crown Royal.
Okay.
Honestly, now what my favorite drink is pretty much water with electrolytes. No sugar,
okay.
Just electrolytes. Yeah.
What's your favorite concert you've seen?
I haven't gone and seen a lot of concerts, but I did see CCR one time live. We were wrestling on this rock show up north, and CCR was headlining, I think, night two. And it was kind of an amazing night. It was kind of like the ring was set up, and me and a couple of the other boys just hanging out there, leaning against the ring watching CCR, and it was amazing. It was the first time I ever listened to CCR live, especially hanging out when I'm being a wrestler, right? It was this was probably my most favorable experience with CCR.
Okay, nice. And then yes, I was a local roadie for 10 years, and I definitely got to work with CCR a few times. And one of the most amazing times when they had the Elliot Easton, the guitar player for the Cars, played with them. Man, that was on top. Unbelievable.
Oh, that would have been amazing to see.
And then what about your favorite sports teams?
The funny thing is the older I get, the less enjoyment I have in regular day life. you know, kind of give you a background. Like, when I was growing up, like, I didn't realize at the time, but I had, like, learning disabilities, like ADHD type stuff, right? So I didn't do very well in high school. But, like, the older I'm getting, like, the more I'm learning about myself, you know, and I'm cleaning up my diet now, my brain's working way better. So I'm realizing that, you know, I should have been sticking knowledge in my head instead of garbage, right? So I don't watch so much sports stuff anymore, but if I went back in the past, like, I was pretty big into CFL, you know, Canadian Football League. So I was a big fan of the Winnipeg Blue Bombers for a long time. You know, and then just typically over the course of years, I might, you know, be like most people and latch on to like superstars like Michael Jordan's, you know, so I enjoy the Chicago Bulls while he was playing. But, you know, yeah, but if I had to pick like a sports team, it would be the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Because I did as a child, I wanted to play football for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. But that never materialized.
Nice. Sign?
One of the things that we learned medically in the last decade to 15 years is bloodborne pathogens are a problem. And in wrestling, there's been a lot of controversy over the years on if it's still appropriate to have blood introduced into wrestling matches or not. There's arguments on both sides of the matter. Were you comfortable, and are you still comfortable, when blood gets introduced into the matches that you are in at the time?
So, you know, I obviously wrestled Wacko and we didn't know anything about this. So we would be doing, like, blood baths, you know. Like, I remember there was times, like, you know, I remember one match, I was wrestling Michelle Starr, and his blood squirting in my face, and I'm bleeding, right? You know, so, like, you know, a lot of us are lucky we didn't catch something, right? But now pretty much what I do is, like, I kind of keep it safe. A lot of the promotions don't like having don't like seeing blood on shows anymore. But, like, if I do it, I typically – depends on who it is. If I know the guy's clean, I don't mind doing a double thing, right? But typically it should be, like, one guy only. Like, even in, you know, there shouldn't be two guys bleeding in the ring. And, you know, and it's like my barbed wire bat, right? Like, I don't it's either I'm getting hit with it or the other guy's getting hit with it. It's not both ways anymore, right? So it's like I try to keep it in the matches a little bit, but I try to dial it back for safety reasons, right? Because, like, I'm all about science, right? So anything science, like a cherry picket, kind of keep it clean. You know, like even that CTE stuff that's floating around, like I've been monitoring that, you know, because, you know, that was a concern of mine too, you know, getting hit in the head so many years with chairs, you know, and I did realize I was having head problems because I got smashed. I had chairs broken in my head left, right, and center. And, you know, I'm worried because I'm watching all these football players and old wrestlers, you know, they're doing things, they're killing themselves. And I'm thinking, you know, this CTE thing, man, is probably going to hit me. You know, and when my ex-wife, when I was with her, like, I warned her about it. I said, so if I start doing weird things, you know, she should probably take me to a doctor, right? But, like, I'm learning about health and nutrition now. And, like, the laboratory at the Boston University that is the official CTE department there, they were the ones that had the actual funding from the NFL. Like, if you look at what the research says now, they're basically saying they're not fully understanding it, but it seems like if you maintain a healthy diet, exercise lots, and socialize lots, you can dramatically slow down the progression of CTE or completely reverse it. And now what I'm learning about, like, health and nutrition is, like, most illnesses that you can get is if you kind of do that stuff, you know. It's like, that's the thing, is like our North American lifestyle is, like, totally shifted, and it's not a healthy lifestyle anymore, right? But if you keep healthy friendships and you eat clean and you don't abuse your body, and you're exercising a lot, you know, you got to get, like, you don't need to do cardiovascular exercise every day, but you got to make sure your heart's pumping pretty good a few times a week and walk lots, you know, you can actually have a really long lifespan. And, you know, like, and if you're a wrestler, you can honestly wrestle for 50 years no problem. So, like, that's what I'm focusing on now, right? It's all the health and nutrition. I'm making healthy lifestyle choices and like, kind of reversing what the North American diet and lifestyle changes have done to us.
All right, nice. And then, hey, how much time do you got left, brother?
I can keep talking if you need me to.
Okay, that's fine. Usually we like to stay about an hour, but Sign has extra time today, so we're happy to have you for extra time today, so we appreciate that.
Perfect.
Now,
I can talk for days.
Okay. Who are some of the best wrestlers you've worked and been on shows with?
Oh, yeah, there's been so many guys. Like, I was really blessed to be on a lot of shows with Chris Daniels. And I never worked him directly, but he always treated me with a lot of respect. you know. Oh, but there's been so many great guys, you know, like even one shots, you know. Like honestly, there's too many to name. Like Gangrel is an amazing human being. You know, like I've worked him before. You know, like that's the thing is like, the more I learn about myself, the more I learn about the guys I'm interacting with, I'm realizing there's a lot of smart dudes in the wrestling business that just didn't really realize they were so smart, you know, but they're using their smarts in the ring, right? And that's what the fans appreciate, right?
Yeah. Okay, and then let me see. Who's some of the up-and-comers people should watch out for?
You know what? I'm gonna praise El Phantasmo again. You know he's working in Japan lots. You know what a lot of people don't know is I kind of took him like under my wing. You know I'm kind of like his dad in the wrestling business, if that makes sense, right? So we were roommates for a while. And we partied a lot, and you know. So the thing is, I helped that kid, you know, keep focused. You know, because, you know, he was like the typical man. A lot of us kind of do dumb things. And we kind of slow down the progression of our careers, right? But, you know, like I helped him stay focused, right? Now he's doing amazing things, right? So, but that guy, he's just going to age like fine wine, and he's just going to get better and better and better. So, like, anytime you get an opportunity to see El Phantasmo wrestle, like, you go get a ticket if you can. But, yeah, like, to me, like, El Phantasmo is like the future of the wrestling business.
For sure, yes. I seen his match versus Steve Miggs when he's Phantasmo's over there saying that he's going to end his career, and that match was definitely believable and amazing. I put that at about a 4.5-star match.
Yeah. Yeah, because the last time I worked El Phantasmo myself, they brought me in to do, I think it was the ECCW, like, 21st anniversary show. And they had me work El Phantasmo, and I can't remember how long we worked. It was like 17 minutes or 21 minutes. Anyway, the match was just phenomenal. And it was so phenomenal that like Dr. Luther and I, you know, we had a bit of a history back in the day where there was a lot of heat, right? But, you know, like Lenny's in the dressing room, and he actually walks up to me, and he goes, like, you know, brother, that was, like, one of the best matches I ever seen. And I had somebody like Dr. Luther walk up to me, you know, especially with that bad blood and historical black blood between the two. For him to say that to me, like, it was, like, a real honor to have that acceptance from him. So,
yeah,
you know, but that was the thing. That was the thing is we didn't work a spot out, man. We just went out there and just did it all on the fly.
Awesome. Sign?
Now, you obviously have worked with enough people over the years that you know on the independents, especially the quality of referees is all over the map at the independent level, and good ones can really help save a bad match and make it passable. They can take a good match and make it terrible if they don't know what they're doing. Who would you say are some of the better referees that you've worked with over your career?
Yeah, so there's been a lot of good referees, like Mark Watson comes to mind. You know, probably the guy that I have the most kind words to say about was Gary the King Allen. You know, he refereed up here in BC quite a bit. He was the ref in my first first tag match. So the first night we did two shows back to back, as I recall, right? The first night we did it. And I did that weapons battle royal. And then the next night me and my tag team partner, Moondog Chops, went up against a team called Generation X, which was, El Antorcha and Strife. And, we had that match and like, you know, honestly, I was lost in it. Totally lost. Didn't know what to do. Like there's three green guys in there. El Antorcha's probably got like a couple years under his belt. So he's, you know, kind of green still too. You know, and he's a great guy, but, you know, he wasn't aggressive enough to call the show or the match, like, in the ring as well. But Gary the King Allen's actually legitimately calling all the spots. Okay, do this next, do that. And if Gary the King Allen hadn't fucking actually kept us going in the ring, the match would have sucked. You know, so like, that's the thing. I learned firsthand, like, how important a referee is in the match and knows what they're doing. And then, you know, like Kevin Jeffries, right? He's an amazing man. Like, I consider Kevin Jeffries like a father to me in the wrestling business. All the dumb shit I do, you know, and he's always there to give me advice. you know. But, you know, it's like these guys, like, you know, when they have such a long history in the business and they know the ins and outs, how a match goes, if you get a referee in the ring that actually has more talent inside their head than they can output through their body, like, those are the guys you want as referees. You know, so that's the thing. That's why I think wrestling promotions need to do more about training referees properly and not just, you know, not just look at them like they're just a thing to be in the ring. Because honestly, a referee makes the match, right? If they're not doing stuff that makes logic in the ring, right, the fans see that and they think it's stupid. You know, subconsciously they see it and they think it's stupid, right? You know, so the referee needs to know what they're doing. So it's like there needs to be more training for the referees, and we need to stop just like having anybody be a referee. Like, oh, we don't have enough referees. Like, oh, put this shirt on this guy, right? We need to actually start training guys. And if somebody's breaking in and wants to be a pro wrestler, and he actually honestly just doesn't have the physical skill sets to do it very well, but he seems like he's got it inside the head to be a wrestler, you know, like, we should support those guys and, you know, help them, you know, fit in as a referee. Because the referee, honestly, depending, you know, if it's a singles match or a tag match, is the extra wrestler in the ring that nobody thinks about.
Definitely. And then, hey, what do you got coming up, brother?
So I'm kind of in the reboot of my career, right? So, you know, I lost a ton of weight. I kind of realized I was probably been slipping out of diabetes most of my life, you know, being overweight. You know, at one point I was almost 400 pounds. So I've been losing weight, and I was kind of, my plan was to kind of lose the weight and then to get back in the gym and start bulking up and kind of get back in shape and before I started looking for bookings, right? But I kind of got sidetracked last year because I got reached out to me by Wild Rose out of Alberta, and they were doing a big 2-day show at the Pavilion Building, the old Stampede Ground in Calgary, and they wanted me to be a part of it. So like honestly, like, I looked like an old man, like an old skinny man, because I just lost all the weight like through fasting and that, and I was like 185 pounds. You know, I look at the pictures of myself. But I took the booking, right? Because, you know, I haven't really been greedy most of my career. You know, guys, you know, they're greedy and that. And I thought, you know, this is the one time. I got an opportunity, and, you know, I might, you know, this whole reboot of my career might not work out in my favor. So it's like, you know, I got an opportunity to wrestle in the old Stampede Building, right? You know, with all the legends wrestled. And I'm just like, you know what? I'm going to take this. You know, I'm probably going to suck. It's going to be horrible or whatever, but I'm going to do this for myself, right? So I did that, right? And, you know, I had a lot of fun. And then after that, I just started slowly hitting the gym, you know, more progressively. And, you know, I've been bulking up, you know, now I'm back up to about 225 pounds. I probably have my muscle density back to where I was when I was like 350, 380 pounds. And back then when I was a fat wrestler, a lot of guys couldn't see it, but I was like a powerhouse, right? Like if a guy was 300 pounds, I could shoot power bomb, no problem. Right. So like I've always been a strong guy because of my powerlifting background. Right. So I've just been slowly getting back in, and I've been not training my ego so much, but I've been slowly accepting bookings and people ask me for them, but I haven't been reaching out saying, hey, I'm available, start booking me. But like, you know, that's, I'm working on it now. So you're going to start seeing me doing shows. Like I did a show at this point it was probably a few months back for All Star Wrestling. I'm going to be doing work for VIPW. You know, the thing is, I'm going to start, you know, I'm pretty close to it now. I'm just kind of tying off some work obligations. And once my work obligations are out of the way and I got a little bit more freedom, I'm going to start reaching out again and I'm going to start working shows. And we're going to try to fix my border problems too. You know, I don't think I really have that many border problems. It's been 20 years. I think, you know, I'm just got to go through the whole process and make sure I can get on the border, you know, across the border, no issues. And then, you know, go through all the right channels and start working shows in the States again. Because, you know what, I don't necessarily need to be like a big superstar, but I absolutely love working shows, even in small crowds. Man, I don't mind if it's a bad house, 10 people, man. I'll go out there and bust my ass for like 25 minutes, no problem.
Definitely, yes. And I've had border problems myself where, of course, it wasn't me, but I was with someone else. And this is in the like late 90s. And somehow they must have had facial recognition or something back then, because they recognized that guy immediately. And next thing you know, we couldn't go to Canada because, of course, I'm riding with him.
Yeah. And it happens, right? You know, I was lucky when I got denied at the border, was by myself, so it didn't affect anybody. But I've had some sketchy goes arounds at the border, right? Like, it's just, you know, it gets kind of scary, right? Because you're going to another country and you're getting worried, like, man, is this bad enough that they're not going to just reject me, they're going to actually try to arrest me? right?
Yeah, yeah.
So it gets scary.
They're gonna tear a car apart like on the movies.
Oh, totally. And find you know, and if it's not your car, where are they gonna find a joint? And all of a sudden, everybody's arrested, right?
Like just, yeah. Sign.
Well, Moondog, we have a game we like to play. We call it Word Association. I'll throw out the names of some guys that you likely have come across in your career. The first word or two that pops to mind is the answer. Are you ready for some word association?
Sure.
All right. First name, Juggernaut.
You know, yeah, that's a tough one. So you just want one word?
Or you can
say few words that pop to mind.
Yeah, one word, maybe a quick sentence. Yeah. Before I say the response, I guess it's kind of a shame because he's kind of broken down. He can't wrestle anymore. But I actually love working that guy, man. So I would probably say, like, Extreme Brother would be the association I would say with him. We had a lot of heat over the years, but I would say – you know, if he was in good physical shape, man, and we could wrestle each other, I'd love to work him again. So I would say Extreme Brother.
Dave Havoc Hollenbeck.
Pardon me?
Dave Havoc Hollenbeck.
I'm going to say Death Threat.
All right. Davey Richards.
I don't like him too much, honestly. I say he's a shitbag. He's got a problem with me. I don't have a problem with him, but I got a problem with him because he's got a problem with me, if that makes sense.
Yes.
Gotcha. I get you. Sandy Barr.
Godfather of wrestling.
Diafula Dabashi.
Crazy SOB.
Ken Hamlin.
I'm going to pass on that.
How about Maniac Matt Bourne?
Brother.
Roddy Piper.
Legend. And I'm going to tell you, I'm going to give you a quick story on this one because a lot of guys don't understand it, but Roddy Piper actually molded my career probably the most off of one thing he told me. I never met him at a show ever, but I happened to be going into my gym one day. And the guys at my gym, like, it wasn't uncommon for wrestlers to be in there. So whenever wrestlers would come in there, the guy that owned the place was a biker. And he would tell the guys that I worked out there, and then he would also tell me that the wrestlers were working out there at the same time. Because he loved me, and he was always pumped up to praise me. And he wanted to see the interactions with the wrestlers in the gym. So I remember being in the change room and meeting Roddy Piper once, and he told me, he says, kid, the best advice I can give you is just be yourself in the ring. And what a lot of people don't realize, with me having a touch of autism, right? Like, the thing is, I'm kind of crazy. So the thing is, when I go in the ring and, like, I'm performing, right? Like, I'm not actually putting a character on. I'm actually just going out there being myself. And that's what got me so popular was what Roddy Piper told me, go out there and be myself.
Nice.
All right. Next name, Diamond Timothy Flowers.
You know, him and I had a lot of heat, so I'd probably say at this point in my life with him, I'd probably say brother also, man. Like, him and I made peace, and he's got my back, and I got his back. So I'd say brother association with him, too.
Next name, Randy the Pimp Taylor.
Uh, And I knew pimps. Like, I knew legit pimps. But to me, Randy Taylor, he's a pimp. Yeah, like that's the funny thing is when I was hanging out with all the troublemakers, right? Like, I was – it wouldn't be uncommon to see me riding shotgun Cadillac, right? But yeah, like, Randy Taylor's, like, authentic. He's authentic pimp.
For sure.
All right, and the last name, Al Tomko.
I never got to meet Al Tomko. I met his kids. But probably thank you. Thank you is probably what I would word associate with him, because he did, you know, keep this territory going, and he did lay the foundation for what I broke into.
Okay, and then I got one. How about Torch?
Yeah, I would say brother, man, because I miss that kid. Him and I, when I first started breaking in, like, when I first started breaking, I think he'd only been working shows for like 6 months maybe. And he was doing, he helped train me, but he'd been on the shows helping out in a capacity, but I think he'd only been wrestling for about 6 months by the time I started training. So, you know, like I was married to him on the road, like my first several road trips. And it was just an awesome experience. Like anytime we had an opportunity to room together, we did. Right. And it was good too, because like I was, you know, I was a little bit of a trouble kid, you know, so like I was a partying hard, and he was a Mormon, right? So he didn't party, right? So him and the other Mormon guys that were in the dressing room, they kind of kept me off to the side quite a bit, kept me level headed, you know. So it's a fun night that was nice, you know. All the boys are partying, and I'm like off in a room with Adam, just like, you know, on torch, just having a, you know, just a nice good night sleep. You know, but it was like, I was like so devastated when he committed suicide, man. It was just, I was having a bad week as it was, and then he found out he passed on. It was just, it was brutal, man.
Yes,
I was really upset by it too, because I remember him reaching out to me probably about a month earlier to me, because I think he was asking me if I had a place to stay or something like that, because I guess he was having marital problems. And I said, brother, sorry, man. I just gave notice because I'm moving in with my now ex-wife, right? So I couldn't do it, right? But I realize now that if I said, yeah, brother, come on over, he probably would have still been alive.
Oh goodness.
So I kind of in the back of my head, I'm kind of a little messed up by that still, right? Thing is, like, I could have saved my brother, you know, because I've had a few incidents like that in my life. Like I had a buddy, Adrian Gilpin. I heard gunshots one night, and I didn't realize it at the time, but there were the gunshots for somebody shooting and killing him. So I got kind of like, it was 3:30 in the morning, right, in my neighborhood. I go, here, pop, pop, pop. I hit up kind of like, I'm like, oh, man, those are gunshots. And I'm like me, I usually go, like, I wonder if I should go out and double check, make sure everybody's okay. I'm thinking, like, no, man, like, if, you know, if something major happened, the cops will come, I'm sure, right, because it's like in the middle of a residential area, right? But then it's like the next day I find out, he got gunned down in the lobby of apartment tower. You know, he was coming home, and they everybody knew who did it, but like there was not enough evidence. But it was like this XBC Lions football player. So what happened was Adrian was dating a girl, and then the girl was dating this XBC Lions player, and the BC Lions player guy had problems or something, right? So I don't know what happened, but he ended up killing Adrian. Adrian was an awesome guy, right? But you know, but this guy was such a troublemaker that I think he might have killed the girlfriend at one point too. And, you know, he's arrested. I think he got charged. I think he's in jail now, right? He's just a total person, right? But that was the thing. It's like those two incidents, I mean, I got a little bit of PTSD from it, because it's like, I thought, it's like, I always think, like, could I have saved Adrian's life? I went out there and I found him, you know, I had Adam come live with him, I saved him, right? So I kind of got a little bit of regret over those two situations, you know, but I kind of had peace with him now.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, and, you know, I didn't know Adam that great, but definitely worked some shows with him and shared the locker room. The world is definitely a better place with him, and he's definitely missed. And then what suggestions do you have for people wanting to get into the business?
Consistency is the key, and don't be afraid to ask questions. If you don't know something, ask somebody that's been around longer. Because all the older guys, typically they're willing to help, right? You know, they don't seem like it, but, you know, if somebody comes up and shows the older guys respect and picks their brains, typically all the older guys want to help because, you know, like me, for instance, like I'm so dedicated to the wrestling industry that because it brought me a lot of joy as a child, right? You know, one of the key components was like my father and I bonded over wrestling because he was a big wrestling fan, right? So, you know, so that was the thing is, like, when I decided to start wrestling, it was, like, my turn to give it back to the fans, right? So, you know, that's one of the decisions why I stopped watching wrestling. Like, I'll watch wrestling while on the show I'm at, right? You know, but, like, I don't usually watch it on TV so much. But I just do it for the fans at this point, right? So, like, that's the thing is a lot of us old-timers were just we're there for the fans to wrestle, you know, for the fans. It's not for our egos, for the fans. So, like, you know, feel free to come and pick the brain of an older guy that's in the dressing room because they have so much knowledge that they're going to be able to pass on to you to help you out in your career.
Yeah, definitely. And then what schools would you suggest?
You know what? It's hard for me to suggest a school because there's so many of them out there now, and there's, like, so many hungry guys getting into the industry at the moment. But if I were to – I don't know about the U.S., but in Canada, I'm sure Lance Storm still has a school going, but I would say go to Lance Storm School.
Yes, for sure. Sign, you got anything else?
Last thing I have for you is if you look ahead to your future and eventually you're going to have that last wrestling match like everybody eventually does, in your dream scenario, who are you wrestling that night?
My dream scenario. You know what? I'm going to give a fictional one because I know it's never going to happen, but if I could end my career the way I want it, it would be versus Cactus Jack.
Wow, yes, for sure.
Yeah, because that's the thing is, like, I watched that guy, and I emulated him quite a bit over the years, right? And he's wrestled a lot of the guys that I know really well. And I met Mick Foley one time. Like, I remember it was back when I was training. They had an autograph sign at, I think, Virgin Records in Vancouver. And it was funny because the Thera brothers were there. You know, getting our autograph signed too. And I went in with a couple of the guys I was training, and the guys I was with, they were all marking out, talking about how they're training to be wrestling. And then Mick Foley looks at me and he asks me, so what do you think about the wrestling business so far, kid? And I looked at him and go, I'm just paying my dues.
Okay,
tip him out,
yeah.
Shut, just said, paying your dues. And he says, that's all you can do, kid.
Okay.
So that's the thing is if I had an opportunity and Mick was in total ring shape, I would love to wrestle him because I used to watch that stuff he was doing out of Japan, and it's like you know I that's the thing is I'd love to have one match with him.
Yes, definitely. And then do you have anything else you'd like to plug or promote? Anything?
I don't know if I really have anything to. You know what? The consistency is the key, man. I just want to tell the young guys, man. It's like, we gotta keep pumping out a solid product, right? You know, like I think a lot of the times the young guys don't understand the business. They think it's about going into the ring and like stroking their own ego. You know, it's like how good their match feels to them. It's never been about that. It's always been about the fans, right? Like you gotta like it's like the fans are paying for the tickets, and it's like a government official. You see the governments, right? They don't work properly because they don't work for the people. They work for themselves, right? So the thing is, if the wrestlers work for themselves and they're not working for the fans, the shows don't work, right? They feel like they work, but they don't actually work. You don't really grow the houses, right? Like the houses get larger and larger and larger while you keep the fans in the mind, right? So there's a whole flow to the show, and the show needs to go with that proper flow for the fans to be entertained, right? And it's all about sending the fans home happy, you know? Just, you got to send them home believing, right? And the thing is, if you feel, you know, if you're believing in your matches, the fans are going to believe in your matches, right? So that's the one worst advice I can give the guys breaking in. And as always, don't forget about the fans. You're wrestling for the fans.
Yes, yes, definitely. And then how do people get a hold of you?
You know what? If they want to get a hold of me, you know, I do have a website, moondogmanson.com. I have an email address on there. I don't really update the website anymore, but I'm on Facebook. I got an official page. You can either reach out to me on Moondog Manson on Facebook, or I think Moondog Manson on Instagram. You know, like my own personal profile or Facebook thing is Maurice Manson. Like, if you find me on there, like, you can add me as a friend. I don't care. But that's probably the best way to get a hold of me is through social media.
Man, it's been an honor and a pleasure and a blessing to have you on. We appreciate you so much and what you've done for the business, and your mind of wrestling is priceless. I wish you all the luck in the world, man. Thank you so much.
Thank you for the kind words, brother. And I was so appreciate being asked to be on this podcast. Sorry it took so long for me to get back to you. I got one of those brains that don't ever shut down, so I'm like constantly super busy and, you know, learning new things, you know. Like, I got a lot of hobbies that most typical people don't have. Like, I'm huge into, like, anthropology and DNA research. So it's like I'm constantly on the learning the science stuff, you know, and I'm always implementing science into my performances now.
Okay, yes. And, you know, you gave us the date of the 13th. You stuck with it. We appreciate that, man. We've had so many people that say they'll come on and don't, or don't even respond after they say they will.
Oh, yeah, lots of flaky business.
So.
A lot of flaky people in this business.
So, yes, thanks again.
Yes, no problem, man. It was greatly appreciated. Thank you, guys.
All right, there he is, the one and only Moondog Manson, Northwest hardcore legend. Thank you so much. Brother Sign Guy, you're a busy man. We appreciate your time today. We got Dave Sullivan on Turnbuckle Turmoil tomorrow. And I'm sure there's a Sign of the Times coming up this weekend, right?
It is loaded on the YouTubes as we speak. It's up there for your viewing pleasure. Go to TheSignGuy77 on the YouTubes, and you shall find it.
And then how do people get a hold of you on social media?
They can find me on the Book of Faces. They can follow me on the Twitter, but not literally because that's creepy, at SignGuyHPW. I'm over there on the Gram, the YouTube, like I said, TheSignGuy77. Also, you can follow Chicken Bob on all the social medias, but not literally because that would creep out Chicken Bob.
And another thing that you don't promote very often, you have your Star Trek reviews and the Star Trek The Next Generation. Let them know about those.
That is accurate as well. You can look those up on the YouTubes, the Sign Guy Star Trek reviews. I'm still on season two. It's been a slow slog through the first two seasons of Star Trek The Next Generation. I will try to get a few episodes up in the next week or so and work my way until we break free and the Next Generation hit a groove. But it's kind of a slow slog through those early years of the Next Generation, Coach. They were not the greatest.
Yes, that's true. And you know, I've been honored to be a co-host with you on Turnbuckle Turmoil, that I've taken QT's place. I'm coming up on 2 years after the summer here. Do you have the rest of the schedule for Turnbuckle?
I do have a schedule here. So, tomorrow, like you said, we have Dave Sullivan, formerly known as the Equalizer in both the Pacific Northwest as well as briefly in WCW. We have, on the 19th, Paul Freakshine making his return after successful brain surgery, his first time back on the show post-surgery. On the 21st, we have the extreme referee of ECW, H.C. Loke. 26th, we have a tag team out of Detroit. One of the members, Angel Marrero, contacted me, and his partner will be on that date. 28th, we will be off for Memorial Day. I will be out of town attending an undisclosed sports entertainment pay-per-view. So 28th, we'll be off. Coming back in June on the 2nd, we have Valak Vial out of New Mexico. On the 4th, we have current Northwest Pro United States Champion Project West. And on the 9th, we have Leo Connors out of Massachusetts. rest of the month. I will be getting up in short order, waiting on a couple of people to confirm dates before I completely get that settled. But some big things coming down the pike. Coach, imagine if Kevin Sullivan, Turnbuckle Turmoil Hall of Famer, calls in to yell at his brother tomorrow. We could have the family heats go down.
Yes, we've been waiting for Kevin to come on my show. He's such a busy guy down there in Florida with Florida Championship Wrestling and his many endeavors. He's constantly touring.
He happens to be in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee for Heroes and Legends as we speak.
Yes, and you and I have been there a couple times. I've been there a couple times, and I've been there with you. I love Jason Maple's promotion over there. And
absolutely. Yes, the Tennessee branch of it. He splits his time between the two places these days. But today's Heroes and Legends in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee. You can also find Turnbuckle Turmoil's former women's expert, Amazing Maria, there. She and her daughter apparently got time off from jail for good behavior because they are out of jail, which we saw them in last week on WOW, and they're at Heroes and Legends today.
And I even think other Northwest favorite, Thunder Rosa, is there today.
Thunder Rosa is at Heroes and Legends. Tons and tons of some of your favorite all-time wrestling legends. Tennessee stud Ron Fuller will be there. There's all kinds of people out there. Saul Creechman is running around there. Spike Huber is there, Coach. We haven't seen or heard of Spike Huber in years, but he's there at Heroes and Legends.
I just happened to see a picture of him today on Facebook. He's looking good. Yes, definitely. Yes,
looks phenomenal. He and Saul Creechman, at one point in time, they were part of the Bruiser family.
Yes, yes. What a legacy. And then on my show, next Saturday at noon Pacific, I've got Feel Good on the 20th. And then the next day, I have a special show right after Turnbuckle airs. It'll be 2 p.m. Pacific on May the 21st. I got Kenny Lush. And then on May 27th, I got John and Emily Waxaka. And then on the 3rd of June, I've got Mean Mark the Chef on. Looking to get some more names booked for you guys. We appreciate all the feedback, all your support, all the questions you guys send in, and just everything. We thank you guys so much. Thank you, Sign Guy, and we'll see you next week.
Do you your name today?
What's that?
Next week when you have Feel Good, are you going to say, hey, do you your name today?
I know, huh? And then, yeah, I guess I can give out my plugs. You can check me out.
That'll be huge.
Jones. I know, yes. And then, hey, that is – sometimes I have to interrupt you before the show ends on your show. So, yes, I know how it is. And then you guys can check me out at Coach Mike Jones, the coach with the most, Coach Mike Jones on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter. Don't forget to check out the Real School Army and the NGW Green Room for hundreds of interviews from celebrities all over the world. Thanks so much, and we'll see you next week.
That's right, everybody. You know who it is. Coach Mike Jones on the coach with the most. Coming at you hard from coast to coast. I don't want to boast, but now I gotta roast you in my social media posts. You double dose, or diagnose. You feeling tired, life inspired, now you're a ghost. I'll be your host, so won't you raise a toast to the coach with the most, Coach Mike Jones.